Coversals kickoff. This is Radio City Talk.
Right, Wimbledon has literally come and gone in a flash. 2 weeks. It does pass by so quickly, doesn't it? Let's reflect on it with Sky Sports' Barry Cowan. Morning to you, Barry.
Good morning, Steve. I don't know what I'm going to do today.
Yeah, it feels like being at a loose end, doesn't it, when Wimbledon stops?
Yeah, because it's not just Wimbledon. It's, of course, the build-up before it, the lead-up tournaments. But I think all of us will be obviously disappointed it's finished, amazed at the quality, but also looking forward to a bit of a break.
We're so lucky being able to watch Roger Federer, the absolute genius, the undisputed, the best ever. Still looks as effortless as ever when you watch him. So graceful.
Yeah, I think it's always a question, why is he the best ever? And it's not just the titles that he's won. I mean, obviously, there are, in the women's game, there are players, Serena's won more slams. It's how he's able to pull everyone in, the way he plays, the way he handles himself, the way he's been able to, being at the top for so long, the longevity. I mean, of course, there are other players who have had the longevity, but everything that he does seems to be perfect. And he probably knew that Murray and Djokovic were going to get injured. So the whole thing last year of taking 6 months off was probably a master plan for him.
I mean, how clever was that? In hindsight, you take the clay court season off, you see everyone around you crumbling with injuries, and all the time you're just feeling great about yourself. Is this going to encourage others to follow a similar vein now, Barry?
Well, I think so. I think it should. Because what it shows with these top guys is you don't have to hit balls every single day. But what you have to do is make sure, first of all, your body is right. Mentally, you're right. And then you can pick up the tennis quite quickly. And, with Federer not playing on the clay court season, of course, beforehand it was important of what had happened. I mean, he'd won a ton of matches. He'd won the Australian Open. He'd won Indian Wells. He'd won Miami. So when he stopped, he was supremely confident. And it was the right decision to not play the clay, because what it also meant was that... Hang on, Steve. My 3-year-old is desperate for
the dad's attention.
Yeah, dad's attention.
There we go. Juggling the two things.
Where were we?
A tennis interview and a 3-year-old.
About the clay. Yeah, no. It was important not to compromise the way he was playing, and I think that was almost the most important thing, more than the actual body use, because of course when you're playing on the clay, you've got to change the way you play. And by going on the grass, it was just, well, this is how I played in Australia. This is how I played in Indian Wells and Miami. And he's just 100% certain about his game style, where you still feel that some of the others, Nadal, I mean, I didn't think adjusted properly against Jules Muller. I was surprised how far back he was returning the serve. Well, it worked on the clay, but it doesn't work on the grass.
But when you're 35, how much is it about age and how much is it about mentality?
Age is, to be honest, Steve, is something that I don't like to talk about anymore with Federer. I think it's wrong to do that. I think it's the same with some of the others, that as long as the will is there and as long as your game has evolved over the years and you're not still stuck with the way you're playing 10, 15 years ago, which, of course, for Roger, it hasn't. I mean, if you think of when we first saw him again, when he beat Sampras in 2001, he served and volleyed more or less every first and second serve. To the Federer that won Wimbledon in those early years when he dominated the sport, was very much a serve and forehand. He actually didn't come in that much with a slice backhand. And now we look at the 2017 version of Federer. At the net, sublime. The backhand has improved. And also the ability to take the ball even earlier. And that's why he has this year dominated everyone else. I mean, of course, we have to put in a little bit of context that Djokovic and Murray are not the same players so far in 2017, but it's that the ability to take time away from opponents. And, we saw that really yesterday after a sort of a nervous beginning. Cilic was the man who actually looked a little stronger. And then from that moment when he missed that second serve return, unfortunately for the Croat, everything unraveled. Federer just, pounced. There was no way he was ever going to let go of that opportunity when he was in control.
Always going to be one winner. When I was watching the game, I didn't feel that sorry for Cilic. And when the commentators are talking about injuries, you're thinking, yeah, yeah, whatever. I'm looking at some pictures today of Maran Cilic's feet. I feel sorry for him. Goodness me, he's played with the most horrific blisters.
Yeah. I mean, I think if we break it down, he started well. And as I said, he to me, looked better. I thought Federer was pretty nervous. It was as bad as uncomfortable as Federer has been on the grass. And then that moment when he missed the return on the break point, and the whole dynamics of the match changed. Federer then went on to win 6 points in a row. And then of course when you're winning, mentally you feel better. When you're losing, you feel more tired, things catch up with you. And I think that was the case with Maran. He's had a wonderful tournament. I mean, it's horrendous to have to go into a Wimbledon final maybe not feeling 100%, but it's always worse when you're not winning. And that's, I'm not criticizing him at all, but I thought the way he fought in that third set, I thought he regrouped fantastically well. You know, he didn't just disintegrate in front of our eyes, and he's got to take the huge positives in the way he's played throughout the tournament. But you know, Federer, you know, even if he had been 100% fit, I think Federer was always likely to win.
It wasn't a showpiece final, and neither was the ladies, although the first set in the ladies was Muguruza and Williams. What was exceptional drama, wasn't it?
It was, and very similar to the men's, because it all hinged on one point. 5-4, 15-40. Venus had a couple of set points, and they had that amazing 19-shot rally. Do you remember that point?
Yeah.
And the whole situation changed. You know, we often talk, well, you know, this sport comes down in the end to the mental side. You have to have the game to start with. But once you're playing, and both of them are playing as well as they are, and I think for Venus a little bit, I feel I'm playing near my best, and the ball keeps coming back. And she had, I was surprised she had no plan B. She didn't sort of take a step back, which of course is difficult to do in the heat of the battle. You have 90 seconds between games and a couple of minutes at the end of the set, and you're 20 seconds in between points. But it was almost she just froze. She just, the blinkers were on, and she just couldn't think clearly. And Muguruza then was just absolutely locked in, and one unforced error in that second set. And amazing that was the first love set that she's lost to Wimbledon, Venus, in all her great career. And it was in the final against a player that has now won 4 titles, and 2 of those 4 titles are slams.
Should she go on to dominate then, Barry, Muguruza?
She should, yeah, but I felt that last year when she won the French, and she'd had a sort of a disappointing 12 months. It's been sort of a common theme, really, with the women's game, apart from Serena, where a player gets to number one or a player wins a slam and they're not able to build on that. But she looks class. She gives the air of confidence that she really believes that she is someone who can dominate the women's game. I think she certainly can. I felt that last year after the French. I think she's more or less a complete tennis player. So she should move onward and upwards. And what will it mean when Serena comes back? Because she will certainly come back. She will certainly want to add to her 23 majors and overtake Margaret Court, who's on 24.
Interesting stuff. It's a Wimbledon that'll be remembered for a variety of things. Injuries and the debate over whether players should be pulling out if they know they're injured. The state of the courts has come in for some sort of criticism as well. Do you think they've been bad? Or?
I think the state of the courts. I thought Djokovic let himself down. I spoke to the head groundsman yesterday and he said that the courts were in great condition. Actually, there was more grass on the courts this year than there were in the previous year. I think that, considering that was 43 degrees in the first week on court, I think that stood up to the test. I thought the scheduling, I thought was ill-advised from Djokovic. I think, you know, anyone that supports Liverpool knows that the dangers of just saying, well, let's open up centre court, which is 30,000 people trying to get a ticket for centre court. I thought Djokovic let himself down there. And to be honest, I think the injuries, the first round prize money is something that they have to look at. It didn't look good on the game. I thought that, you know, unfortunately, that first, which was the first Tuesday, wasn't it? Was it the first Tuesday?
I think it was, wasn't it? Yeah.
Yeah, it was the first Tuesday with Djokovic and Federer, both their opponents pulled out. I think for every man and woman on the street, they find that very hard to take. £35,000 for turning up, and they basically play a couple of games and walk off. It doesn't look good. I understand why the players do it. They work incredibly hard to get in that position. So therefore, for me, the only solution is that if you almost, you know, you make the cut, you get into the main draw, you're guaranteed the prize money, but you don't walk on unless you're fit, and you give yourself someone else another chance to be able to play who's been in the qualifying, and then everyone's the winner.
And just very quickly, you mentioned the prize money then. I was really surprised that actually, and we had British success with Jamie Murray and Martina Hingis in the mixed doubles, but they win just £50,000 each.
Mm. I suppose you want me to answer that with, do you agree or disagree?
Does it feel too low, or does it feel like the other one's too high?
I think the first round prize money for singles is right. I do. I think that's... If you're top 100 in singles, you are a great tennis player. You have dedicated yourself to years and years and years and years. And if you pay a coach and you pay their travel, you need to earn. You know, I don't think anyone would begrudge. Well, no one seems to begrudge a footballer if they are injured and they take the money. And you know, there's footballers who are lower than 100 in the world in their profession and also some other sports that are earning a lot more money than that. Golf, for instance, if you're 100 yeah. on the US money list, you're earning a lot more than the £140,000 that you're guaranteed for four majors. I just think that it just doesn't look good. I mean, of course, it's a headline, 35,000 for playing four games. I can understand people who work incredibly hard, who probably don't even earn half that in a year, let alone for playing four or five games. But it's what you do to get to that situation. In regards to the mixed doubles, I was surprised, actually. I thought it was going to be more than 50,000. You know, given also how important that match actually became yesterday, because it was.
Yeah.
And that match was within the spotlight, given the shortness of the singles final, and obviously with it being the interest as well, with it being Jamie with Martina Hingis and also Heather Watson with her partner Kontinen, who won it last year.
The kickoff on Radio City Talk, your one stop for Merseyside sport. This is Radio City Talk.